This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark and Wong Xiaoning. It's 7:36 in the morning, Thursday, the 9th of April. Looks to be a nice sunny day that most of us unfortunately cannot enjoy because we're into day 24 of the movement control order, I'm guessing at this point, because I've just completely lost track.
Well, what's important is that this Friday we will find out whether the movement control order will be lifted or whether it will be extended. So I guess we all have to watch this space.
Absolutely. And while the movement control order is underway, though, our timings have shifted a little bit. It's clearly not 6 o'clock when we start our show anymore. But the breakfast grill is at the same time as always. So later on after the 8 o'clock news bulletin, Noelle Lim will be speaking with Carmelo Ferlito, senior fellow over at Ideas.
Yeah, I mean, all countries around the world are trying to deal with this unprecedented economic shock as a result of the COVID-19 outbreak. So Noelle will discuss the various options at hand for governments and stakeholders to respond with Carmelo Ferlito, who is the senior fellow at the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, otherwise known as Ideas. She's going to take a magnifying glass to the recently announced Prihatin Rakyat stimulus package and maybe compare it to other economic support plans.
Now, we're also running a poll on the BFM Twitter account, that's at BFM Radio, because as COVID-19 takes its toll on businesses, should the pandemic be considered a reason for relief from contractual obligations? Do let us know what you think. We're going to be taking a look at the results of the poll throughout the rest of the morning. But right now, we have some newspapers in front of us, and we're going to be taking a look at what's on the front pages. The New Straits Times sits in front of me, and on its front page is a picture of a man sweeping the streets with wearing a face mask, and its headline is Unsung Heroes, talking about the cleaners, the sewerage and sanitation workers and the street sweepers who have nevertheless continued working outdoors throughout the MCO, risking their health daily.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, sometimes when I drive past, they're the only people on the road in their little red T-shirts. And yes, you know, kudos to them because they are keeping things going. And yeah, there is a lot of risk as long as you're out there.
But I guess the only upside would be there's probably not as much litter to sweep up considering there are fewer cars on the road and nobody's throwing rubbish out their windows.
That is true. But we hope that this will continue regardless of whether there's an MCO or not. So please, don't wind down your windows and throw trash from the car. Or just generally don't throw trash, you know, please.
Anywhere outside of the designated trash cans.
Yes. The Star, the headline is Safety First. And this is about, you know, whether the MCO will be extended beyond the 14. Because health experts are not ruling out that the MCO will be extended because the number of COVID-19 cases aren't letting up. Now, a government source says some businesses may be allowed to operate, but, you know, at the end of the day, the main thing is the overall well-being of their workers and customers are not compromised. Now, this other byline sidebar on the Star newspaper is interesting, but it's also terrible news because apparently face masks are going missing during transit. So yes, you can order your face mask and get it delivered to your house, and on the way, it gets nicked.
Wow.
Yes, terrible.
Clearly, I guess this is because there's probably a black market demand for them now.
Yes.
So this is why we get this kind of loopholes in the supply chain being exploited.
Well, yeah, I mean, we heard about, and I'm not, you know, if we could rank stealing, I mean, one of the most horrendous things is when you find out that masks have been stolen from hospitals. Have you read about that?
Yes.
Gloves, masks, sanitizers from hospitals. That's just the ultimate. Now, this just comes below that.
Just below that.
Just below that. I mean, please, order your own. Don't pilfer anybody's mask.
Yes, indeed. Now, looking at the Malaysian Reserve, obviously gone with a bit of more of a business-focused headline because they are a business paper, they've gone with property prices to fall. So this is as the country is bracing for a recession and consumers tighten their spending over worries on potential job losses, because we did just see Bank Negara very recently update their expectation for the GDP of Malaysia to, I think, contract by as much as 2%. The most optimistic scenario was a 0.5% growth.
Yeah, yeah, that was not that optimistic, but just slightly better than negative. Yeah, the Financial Edge Daily, their headline is trading volume swells, but not value, which is true because when every morning when I go through the top value stocks, it's not that much in terms of the amount. It's like 10 million ringgit, 11 million ringgit. So yes, you know, you do get this sense that there's a lot of volume, but it's not the big cap stocks. It's not the likes of like your Maybank or CIMB or Tenaga or Public Bank. It's really more the penny stocks.
And I also have opened the Malay Mail online and looking at their lead story. Right now, their lead story posted an hour ago is Malaysia's sporting world braces for lengthy hiatus as COVID-19 wreaks havoc on seasons. And I think we saw this very recently when the Tokyo Olympics were postponed. I think it's now going to be held next year, right? 2021?
Yeah, it's going to be held exactly at the same time, but just next year. I'm just curious, what are they going to do with all the T-shirts, all the materials that have been printed, all the signs? I mean, even I have a Tokyo Olympics 2020 sweatshirt. Apparently, they're just going to keep it as 2020. They're not going to change it.
Yeah, I guess not, because how much money are they going to incur, first of all? And but see, this story is looking at not just the Olympics, obviously, but sporting events around the world in different countries, because everyone's going to be a little bit hesitant about perhaps going to
a stadium.
A stadium, just any kind of crowded place, yeah. Probably for the next year. That's how long the sporting event, the sporting organisers are expecting this lull to last for them. And that's not even counting if the government continues to impose restriction orders, perhaps similar to the MCO, or restrictions on other kinds of mass gatherings, perhaps for entertainment purposes. So it's a disruption in for pretty much everyone in every industry at this point.
Yeah, until maybe a vaccine is found and, you know, they do manage to, everybody gets their vaccination. I think, you know, those images of in our mind of completely packed football stadiums, packed Olympic stadiums, even a rock concert. That's not...
Even a cinema. I mean, who wants to go to your local, the local cinema in your local mall, you know, and sit elbow to elbow with someone during this pandemic?
I think, you know what, production houses, if you ask me, will have no choice. They will have to launch it online, and that will be the new wave, right? So, you know, maybe...
They've already started. I think Artemis Fowl has gone straight to Disney Plus, and I believe Marvel has postponed some of their releases as well to next year.
Well, I'm just dying to know how James Bond will be launched in November, because it was supposed to come out in April, right? So now we're talking November, and I'm a big James Bond fan. Big. I catch every single one because I dream of being a spy.
as do we all, I'm sure, Shaoning. But right now we're heading into some messages and then we'll be back after that to take a look at some of the business news of the day. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Shaoning. Now we're running a poll this morning on the BFM Twitter account. That's at BFM Radio. Because as COVID-19 takes its toll on businesses, should the pandemic be considered a reason for relief from contractual obligations? So we're running that poll. Do let us know what you think. We're going to be taking a look at the results later on in the morning. But in the meantime, taking a look at some updates, particularly on the MCO, because the government is set to decide tomorrow on whether or not the month-long movement control order will be extended. Now, questions have arisen over if there's a need for additional economic stimulus packages, as a longer MCO would have an impact on the near-term economic outlook for the country. Bank Negara's growth projection for 2020 assumed the MCO will end on April 14th, and that forecasted an economic growth of negative 2% to 0.5% at its most optimistic.
Now, the central bank does expect safety measures such as social distancing and restricted gatherings to continue after April 14. But nonetheless, a longer MCO will definitely mount further pressure on domestic economic activities. Now, quoted by the Star Biz, the Social Economic Research Centre executive Lee Heng Jui says he expects the Malaysian economy to contract by 3% in 2020. And he suggests if the MCO is extended with some form of relaxation in allowing more economic sectors to operate, the economic loss impact on the economy might be shallower compared to the current MCO.
Yes, so Stubb has also asked Bank Islam's chief economist, Mohammad Afzanizam Abdul Rashid, if the government should announce more stimulus measures if the MCO is extended. And he said existing measures, such as wage subsidies, are meant to last for 3 months. In this sense, so the present measures should be able to mitigate the impact of the of a longer MCO. But what's more important is to ensure the measures will actually reach their targeted groups more effectively and in a timely manner, because, you know, announcements are one thing, but implementation is another. And we're still hearing stories of lower income families, perhaps in the PPRs and the people's housing projects, still finding it difficult to subsist on a daily basis because they either have no income or have no access to basic needs like food.
Yeah. And I think some questions were like, okay, fine, you have this access the government is giving you. But, you know, some people have no bank accounts. They couldn't access it. They, you know, they weren't somehow on the Bantu Ansara Hidup list. Issues like that do crop up. But there's also questions about how does the government plan to raise more cash if there are going to be new stimulus packages. So, I mean, one point is that, you know, that we do have deep capital markets and we do have long-term investors such as pension funds, asset managers and insurance. So perhaps the government would have no choice. They would have to issue more bonds and sukuk to fund this if there is another batch of stimulus.
Well, you never know. Perhaps they're going to be getting some money at least from the compounds that are going to be issued starting today, I believe, because as in the next phase of the MCO, a stricter phase kicks in. Police have begun issuing 1,000 ringgit compound notices to those who defy the MCO. So Bukit Aman's Internal Security and Public Order Department Director, Dato' Sri Akril Sani Abdullah Sani, said that once issued, these compound notices will have to be settled at any health ministry office within 2 weeks. So those who disobey the MCO will be brought to the police station before being handed a compound notice. And if they refuse to pay the compound amount, they may then request for trial. So there's going to be no more of the, oh, two people in the car, just turn back and go home now.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. And it also doesn't make sense to put these MCO offenders into jail, right? Because in the initial part of the MCO, there was some confusion and people were being hauled up and put into lockup. And of course, then there was a question is, aren't we practicing social distancing? Why are we putting these people at risk? You know, so it doesn't make sense. And even our Chief Justice came out to say something about prisons being overcrowded. You know, why are we going down this path? So, yeah, if you break the law, I think it makes absolute sense to just pay the compound, you know, make it quick, make it fast. It is quite a painful slap on the wrist, and then you move on. Don't put them in jail. It doesn't make sense.
Yes, and in terms of, and for the people, you know, it's been a month under this MCO, and yes, it is. It's a massive inconvenience to everyone. But at the end of the day, if we want to really flatten this curve, this is what we need to do. There's no way around it, really.
I mean, it's encouraging that our IGP has said that there's 99% compliance. So good. We just need to make it 100% if it's possible.
Indeed. Now, this is something that we will be watching quite closely. But over in the US, there's been some interesting developments there out of the presidential race, because Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders has suspended his campaign, making former Vice President Joe Biden the presumptive Democratic nominee to face current President Donald Trump in the November 3rd presidential elections. So, in a live-streamed speech to his supporters, Sanders said that the path towards victory is virtually impossible. He shot to an early lead in the race, but faded somewhat quickly after losing South Carolina in late February as more moderate Democrats consolidated their support behind Biden. Because while Bernie Sanders is a bit... is a Democratic socialist, and his progressive agenda has pulled the party quite sharply to the left. And originally, I think there were already some concerns when he first became one of the frontrunners, whether or not he would alienate moderate Democrats. And it appears he may have driven them away.
Yeah, and Sanders' decision comes at a time when the country is faced with a massive coronavirus outbreak, which has kind of upended the nominating schedule, with some primaries postponed and others up in air. Now, he himself, Bernie Sanders, has been under pressure to halt his campaign after Biden won resounding victories in primary contests on March 17 in Florida, Arizona, and Illinois. But some allies had encouraged Sanders to stay in the race to further influence Biden's policy decisions. decisions. But I think this coronavirus crisis has really much shifted public focus away from the campaign. And with all rallies actually being cancelled, I think Sanders really has very, very little chance of winning the nomination of the Democratic Party. So at the end of the day, really, what's the point, right? You better come up with a presidential nomination, rally behind him, and then maybe, you know, they have a chance come November. Although there's a question mark, will elections be held?
Yeah, you wonder how elections are ever going to be held under all of these restricted movement orders. But I think the question of whether or not the Democratic Party can now rally behind Joe Biden is not something that we can take lightly, because, you know, the similar to the campaign, I think, between Sanders and Hillary Clinton, it became so acrimonious at the end that it was very difficult for Sanders supporters to support Clinton, and that was one of the reasons that analysts say she failed to garner traction at the polls. So is that going to happen a second time? And is President Trump going to be able to take advantage of the incumbency advantage, basically?
What I've noticed is interesting is that all the other candidates who did try to win this presidential nomination for the Democratic Party, now, there were a lot of them. I think there was as many as 23 or 24, right?
At one point, yes.
Yeah, at the beginning. What was interesting is as soon as they dropped out of the race, they very quickly decided who they were going to support. And I think most of them actually supported Biden. Because when I listen to them on podcasts, like Cory Becker, for example, their point is the main thing is they want Trump out of the White House, okay? They do not want another 5 years of this man there. So they realized the problems that they created during the Hillary Sanders campaign, you know, 5 years ago. And that was the fault. That was their fault. So it's a little bit more like, okay, let's you know, put aside our party differences. We really, our objective has to be, a Democrat has to be in the White House at all cost. And I think when they look long and hard at the two candidates left, Biden is the one that, you know, is the middle guy, the one that they think Americans would vote for.
I'll be interested to see Donald Trump's performance in this election, actually, because, you know, when it's been 4 years since he won the presidency, and in the first, I think, 2 years, he was riding on the economic wave, so the US was doing quite well, and he, of course, took credit for a lot of that, even though it was already on the upswing. But it nevertheless gave him some points. But now, with the COVID-19 pandemic in everyone's crosshairs, how he reacts to this and how he reacts to the oil price war that's happening between Saudi Arabia and Russia, that's going to be very interesting. It's going to have a very material impact on what happens in November. Of course, that's, of course, if the election goes ahead and people somehow find a way around the massive queuing at polls and the flagrant lack of social distancing that would result.
Exactly. I'm going to be interested to see how this election, if it happens, in what form will it take?
Now, taking a look as well at some business news this morning, Oyo Hotels and Homes, which is the Indian budget lodging service backed by SoftBank, they're placing thousands of its employees globally on indefinite furlough as they try to survive through this coronavirus pandemic. And this is a Bloomberg source story. So Oyo said in a statement, it's furloughing employees in countries excluding India without specifying numbers, adding that it's not considering job cuts at this time. So the startup is one of the largest in SoftBank's portfolio and has more than $1 billion of cash in the bank. But they're exploring options on how to remain viable over at least the next 36 months.
Yeah, their CEO, Ritesh Agarwal, who's also the founder, told employees in a video message that revenue had dropped 50 to 60% from the initially estimated growth of 10 to 15%. I mean, exactly. Accommodation, hospitality is basically really, I would say, sadly dead during this COVID-19. But what's interesting is that, you know, they are funded by SoftBank, and SoftBank's problems don't seem to be ending because there is some kind of friction going on in WeWork, because WeWork has sued SoftBank over a decision to walk away from a stock deal. Now, they filed a lawsuit against SoftBank after it scrapped a $3 billion agreement to buy stock from former CEO Adam Neumann, and and other shareholders. Now, WeWork claimed that SoftBank had breached contractual obligations and their fiduciary duty by failing to complete the deal.
Every time I see WeWork in the papers, I feel like I need to pull out a basket of popcorn or something, because it's better than some soap operas out there, right? So, I mean, previously, SoftBank agreed to buy shares from former WeWork chief executive officer Adam Newman, venture capital firms, as well as employees. And this share purchase was hammered out in October as part of SoftBank's bailout of WeWork after their failed IPO left them just weeks away from running out of money. So in that deal, SoftBank would have taken an ownership stake of almost 80% in the company and buy $3 billion in shares from investors, as well as current and former employees. And they came under a lot of criticism because of the fact that it very much seemed like they were throwing good money after bad, because WeWork had basically misrepresented itself in its IPO. They painted themselves like a technology firm without considering all of the downsides that came with the fact that they were actually basically a real estate firm.
Yeah, they were just a glamorous landlord, if you ask me, with fantastic marketing. But now you think in COVID-19, right? Do co-working spaces work? You know, the whole idea of it doesn't appeal so much as it used to, right? So would you go and rent a space? I mean, even if, let's say, there's 1 or 2 meters distance between you and the next person, I mean, then, you know, from a WeWork's perspective, can you really achieve those numbers, you know? So I'm not surprised that SoftBank is like, oh, please, where's the escape hatch? Let's go from this deal, okay? We already poured so much money into it. Exit.
Yes, so this is something that's going to be very, very interesting to watch, the outcome of this lawsuit. But right now, we're about to head into the 8 o'clock news bulletin. Don't go away. After that, we have The Breakfast Grill, where Noel Lim speaks with Carmelo Frelito, senior fellow at the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, about the unprecedented shocks of the COVID-19 outbreak. Stay tuned after the news. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.